Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the podcast that will never, ever be released due to budget cuts. I am sure of this. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the unexpendable Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you doing? What is the current temperature in your apartment?
Let's see. Roughly right now, it is around 78 degrees.
Oh, I would kill for 78 degrees.
So here's the issue: is that the AC is actually set at 71, but it's it is genuinely just not strong enough to cool the house down. So yeah,
I understand.
But yeah, otherwise doing good, doing good. You called me unexpendable, so I'm gonna use that as a way that you can never fire me from this podcast. It is in writing. I'm looking at it right now.
Well,
that counts.
We're lucky that the budget for our podcast is so low to begin with. So like it makes it tough to cut us for budgetary concerns.
If anything, it'll be creative differences. if you ever future endeavor me, I swear to God.
Yeah, I would say like, well, I wish you all the best, Tyler Ward, in your future endeavors. Yeah, it's sad that this is what we have to now do a third episode about.
It's still happening.
But it's becoming the familiar tune of the year. It's, you know, we've talked about mass releases post WrestleMania as a thing WWE does, and then there was a second batch that seemed newsworthy kind of because of the people that were involved in it, more so than the fact that there was a second round. So fool me twice, I guess, shame on us. Fool us three times and it's like, uh-oh, what's going on here?
Guys, what's happening?
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that at the top of the show, and then on the second half of the show, we are going to do a review of Double or Nothing and then talk about where AEW is going from there. To Quadruple or Nothing, Let It Ride. I don't know why they don't. If they ever had a pay-per-view that was like WrestleMania Backlash, I feel like it'd be Double or Nothing, Let It Ride. Right.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Or like Double Down. Yeah.
Keep those gambling puns going.
I'm full of them. So then let's really get into this and dive right in to the releases that won't ever end. Last week, there was a really ominous tone in the pro wrestling air when the reporter Sean Ross tweeted on Wednesday. He tweeted, "It's going to be a busy day tomorrow," and then he did the definition of the word embargo and what it means in a reporting sense. So we all should have known that the hammer was about to drop, because then WWE continued their spring cleaning into summer by releasing Braun Strowman, Aleister Black, Ruby Riott, Lana.
I was like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, maybe I never really said Lana out.
I've never said Lana's name before.
Wow. Yikes. Santana Garrett. What if I was then like Santana Garrett?
I thought you were. I thought you were going to say it.
and Buddy Murphy. Reportedly, the new head of talent relations, or relatively new head of talent relations, Johnny Ace, let the entire roster know via text message that these releases were due to budget cuts. That's a crazy statement. So I guess we've had a little bit of time to digest this now. So let's go through some lingering questions that this third surprise release gives us. Tyler, I guess first is, who are you most surprised to see in this bunch of six names?
Man, so I was torn between two, and I think for like slightly different reasons. At first I was very shocked that Aleister Black was let go. Not so much necessarily that they let him go, because I feel like he's been kind of pseudo wanting his way out for a while, with his wife being released in a very controversial way last year and all that stuff. But it was more that they just brought him back. They just reintroduced Alistair to the main roster storyline with his new, this like what he called the Dark Father character, which I thought was very interesting. I love to see what he could have done with that, but like he was 2 weeks in and then they dropped him. So that was shocking, but honestly, definitely the most shocking of this is definitely Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
Braun didn't have any like major storylines going on right now. To be fair, he was in big storyline at Mania that concluded, and then he was most recently in a world title match at the last pay-per-view.
Yeah, main event of the last pay-per-view. Yeah.
But Braun being released is shocking to me because Braun is a homegrown WWE guy. He's never worked anywhere else. They've built him from the ground up. B, he is one of the biggest, strongest, most towering performers you have, which is literally Vince McMahon's bread and butter. He's not the best promo, but like he could get better.
Yeah, but he's not like a liability in that sense. You know, like he knows his like five things that he says, and exactly. They continue to get virtual reactions.
He's got fun catchphrases. He's got T-shirts that I'm sure like some people buy. I still don't understand the Braun Strowman one. I was immediately like, man, he must have done something wrong.
Well, I guess let's try to figure out why these happen. I mean, like, I agree with you about the two that were most surprising to me. To go back to Aleister Black just for a second, mm-hmm. I think we had both kind of assumed he was going to be released, months ago.
Oh, yeah, around the time that his wife got released, I thought.
But, so that's even longer ago
was he already off television around that time? Mm-hmm.
Yes, he was. So it seems like overkill maybe to bring him back to mm-hmm. put this time into his character. And like I know that there have been reports recently too of his wife coming back to the Performance Center.
And that too.
So like I feel like maybe that must have been wrong, or maybe she was gonna come back and like certainly isn't
going
to now.
What is happening in this company?
Well, that's what we're gonna get into here. But before we get to that, about Braun, mm-hmm. if you believe that budget cuts is the actual impetus for these mm-hmm. releases, Braun Strowman makes sense. Because he has a like, you know, somewhere in the ballpark of a $1 to $3 million a year deal that he negotiated for right before AEW became a thing, when WWE was really in like a re-signing, you know, phase and was like expanding their roster. So if you're cutting someone because you need to get rid of money, mm-hmm. Braun Strowman was a expensive price tag. But is he more expensive than the potential value that he had to the company? I pose that to you, Tyler.
that's the tough question here, because that is dependent not only upon WWE's perspective, but the perspective of the answer of a later question that we're going to have.
Yeah.
But I think Braun still had value to WWE, but after hearing those numbers, the fact that Braun Strowman was making $1 million or more a year, that seems like a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Strowman, that seems like a lot.
So then does he have, you know, is he not as valuable as, like, let's say Baron Corbin at half the price or almost at like no money? You know,
is
like
Baron's half guys. The price of Braun?
I don't know. I'm just like assuming, because you know, like this is one of those things too, where like the longer someone's been at the company and the more prominently they've been featured, you imagine the more money that they are making, right? Mm-hmm. So like Aleister Black is a weird one to me because he hasn't been on the main roster for all that long.
Yeah.
And
I can't imagine he negotiated a huge contract. Certainly nothing like Braun's.
No. I can't believe that either. The same kind of goes for, I guess Ruby Riott's been on the main roster for a while, but mm-hmm. that one doesn't seem like one that would cut all that much money.
No.
Lana, I guess, makes sense. She is like an elder stateswoman who doesn't wrestle much, who the person that she most naturally manages is no longer in the company, right? So, okay, that makes sense. But then Santana Garrett and Buddy Murphy don't make sense along that line either to me. As like, you know, they're not super long tenured.
Santana Garrett, I can't imagine that she was making any more than an NXT star makes.
Yeah, but. Yeah. So I'd say about half of that list makes sense from a budgetary perspective.
Yeah.
And you know, except for Santana Garrett, everyone else in this list was being used prominently on TV.
When was the last time Buddy Murphy was on television? Because the last I remember of Buddy Murphy was the weird storyline he had with Rey Mysterio's daughter.
Yeah.
It kind of went nowhere.
Yeah, so maybe, his storylines were dropped like before WrestleMania. Yeah.
I just can't remember the last time I saw him.
Yeah, he was just so prominently used in the past year his connection to Seth Rollins and to Rey Mysterio, right? Mm-hmm. So like it seems odd to have someone be that prominent last year and then all of a sudden is released, has nothing to do. Yeah.
I mean, shoot, Braun was just main evented your last pay-per-view.
Yeah. So I halfway believe budget cuts with this list, mm-hmm. but then the other half, maybe they just didn't think that they had anything to offer them. Or maybe it was like, you know, other than Braun, I can see everyone on this list having, you know, floated the idea or at once like went to WWE management and asked for a release. And mm-hmm. maybe now that they're like, oh, let's get rid of it. So let's cut our budget. So let's start with the people who asked for their releases. But I can't see a world where Braun Strowman would have ever asked for that.
No. And honestly, I can't. I mean, I don't know. It seemed like they were, again, used decently, and also they seem to be fine where they're at. Like I can't see Buddy Murphy asking for a release, at least while he was still on television. Maybe after they dropped a storyline and everything, he wanted out. But yeah, that's wild.
We'll see. I mean, he's been, you know, audibly unhappy on Twitter, even like during his Seth Rollins, you know, Buddy storylines. Yeah. But you never know. We're gonna put on our business pants now to answer the second question.
Man, I'm in shorts. It's real hot in here.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm going to put on my business shorts.
Yeah, I'm going to put on my business wet towel, cold wet towel. So the narrative then of if you are trying to cut your budget on a company that has reported, you know, its greatest financial gains
record
ever,
profits.
Yeah, then the narrative has shifted then to like, okay, well, if you're doing that, you are planning to sell the company. Mm-hmm. Do you think, Tyler, hard question, that is what is happening right now?
This is so tough because this has happened, not this, like the releases and everything, but the speculation of this company being sold has come up many times before, and it never seems to happen because it always involves Vince McMahon relinquishing power, and that's just not something he seems to be capable of doing. Yeah. But again, the stars are aligning right now where it seems like that's what's happening. This began with when Vince removed, I can't remember those two executives' names, but there's these two executives who worked within WWE who are extremely higher up, and like Vince was working with them for years in terms of running the company and figuring out the direction of the company. They were released like last year or the year before and replaced by this guy named Nick Khan.
Yeah.
Nick Khan is no relation to Tony, mm-hmm. but
but he is Nick, like, he's, can I say he's like if Jerry Maguire was a, I guess Jerry Maguire was a real person, but like, it, like he is like a high powered lawyer and sports agent who has been like given the keys, and I'm sure came in with like, here's my 10-point plan to like really whip the company into the new age, and Vince certainly bought it.
I think he exactly that, and literally he just came in and was like, "Let me show you how much money I can make you," and So Nick Khan came in, got a very like high up position in the company. He is the one who was responsible for negotiating the sale of the WWE Network to the Peacock Network for reportedly $1 billion.
I mean, he's currently, Nick Khan is now already ascended to be the president and chief revenue officer of WWE. Well, so like, other than Vince, he is the highest person in the pyramid, I think.
Exactly. So like, he is continually moving up the WWE ladder. And again, it starts to beg the question of like, okay, why is this guy who his professional resume right now is clearly he is good at negotiating deals and like, you know, selling things basically. Why is this guy now at one of the highest positions in the company unless you're looking to sell this company? So that's like thing number one. Thing number two, like again, Vince is getting older, and it would not, like, I don't know Vince McMahon personally, but from all the reports of who he is as a person and his character, it does not seem like a stretch that Vince McMahon would rather sell this company than let anyone else run it.
That's really fascinating as a thing to pitch, because I the only thing that has stopped me from accepting that they're trying to sell the company is me thinking about Vince at 75, 76 years old. And like, I understand a person at 50 wanting to sell the company and like take the money and retire and like, you know, spend the third act of your life, you know, with a bunch of money and no responsibility. But at 75, at this point, like, you might as well sticking out.
Might as well keep going, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I can only see him selling in my head if he didn't have, like, if it wasn't going to continue to be a family business. And like, Stephanie and Triple H, like, certainly seem like they want to continue to carry out the vision, sure, yeah. But maybe they are just not the people to do it at that head position. Maybe they are like much better at the roles that they're in.
I mean, I think they'd absolutely want to, but again, it's just a matter of getting Vince to actually relinquish the reins. And I don't think, honestly, like, the cynic in me wants to say that Vince wants to sell this company for reportedly $3 to $4 billion, and then he's just going to use that newly acquired $4 billion to finally once again try the XFL thing. Like,
he lost what, like 150 million, or one, did he lose $1 billion in the XFL? He lost a lot of money.
I don't remember the first try. This most recent try, right before the pandemic, I don't know. Because I remember he sold a bunch of stock. I think he sold a bunch of stock right before the new XFL was announced or something. Because everyone was like, oh, he's doing this to start the XFL again. I think it was like $120
million. He put $200 million of his own money into it. Is what 200, I just saw. Yeah.
I don't know if he lost any of that. Because I remember like right as the pandemic and quarantine was happening when they just like liquidated the whole XFL.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm not sure how much money he got back on.
Yeah,
that,
he definitely lost money because I think The Rock bought it from him. But he definitely lost money. I don't know if he lost all that $200 million, but I don't buy that he is in such financial dire straits that he needs to sell the company to make up for the personal money that he lost.
No. I don't think it's making up. I think this is going to be try number three. Like,
can I float another scary idea your way?
Okay, hit me.
Of another reason that someone would suddenly need a whole lot of liquid cash.
Is this bad?
I think it's bad. I think if you see a pathway to run for president.
Oh no. No.
I mean,
oh god.
I think and maybe it'd be Linda. But like,
it would have to be Linda.
I think that that is the only other thing I could come up with that is like a cost motivated thing, right? Other than being like, okay, I've had my time in the sun. My daughter and my son-in-law don't want to take over the whole thing, so I'm just gonna sell. Like man. I don't that doesn't seem like Vince. Running for president seems like Vince.
That's the darkest timeline.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh my God.
And I know that we all like underestimated Donald Trump when That's he true. Ran for president, but like I really can't see.
I can't see.
I think Vince actually has more baggage initially.
Way more.
Yeah.
Well, not like maybe Trump's done like worse like actual things like in reality, but like Vince McMahon has a plethora of recorded like
yeah like
skits and shit that just don't look good.
Like if he can't get through like a softball interview with Bob Costas without wanting to like beat the shit out of him, then he's not like he's not gonna like make it far. So like I don't know. Or maybe like maybe it's not for him, but I could like a big political move is the only other thing I could think of that would cost that much money, right? Like I don't know that maybe. He would do football again, because also the USFL just announced that they're reviving another football league. That was like last week. The Rock has said he wants to do stuff with the XFL now that he has it. There's a spring league going on. There's a fan-owned league. Like,
how much is the NFL collectively worth?
Oh, way more than $4
billion. Okay, I was like, can he buy the NFL?
Oh, man.
He can't beat them, so he will buy them.
That would be amazing if he bought the NFL just to relieve the Khan family of their ownership of the Jaguars.
God, that's true.
Like if that was his roundabout way to get rid of AEW.
What a diabolical plan.
It seemed like I'm trying to find out exactly how much the NFL is worth. Okay, it's worth like $15 billion. So like there's no way that Vince could be buying that. Yeah, I don't see that, but there has to be something that he's preparing for would be my guess. Or that they're not trying to sell the company. But then like if they're not trying to sell the company, then what is going on?
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
Like I haven't heard another pitch that makes
another
sense.
Reason to justify these cuts under budget constraints. But
actually, you know, one just came to me, and I'll pitch it this way. I think the releases still are like an overreaction, but you know, the other big news in WWE is that they're going to resume touring, right? I know that touring costs a lot more money than producing in the Thunderdome. You know, so maybe they want to hold on to this newfound wealthy status, and it's like, okay, we have to cut some weight before touring.
Well, actually that does bring up a good point. That was something else people were reporting, that it doesn't necessarily that they're selling the company, but having to adjust their daily procedures for COVID restrictions and everything in the last year and a half. It's people are reporting, they're saying that WWE has like had a veil lifted basically of realizing how bloated a lot of their departments are and how much money they're wasting. So that was one of the things reported they had. I mean, it sounds weird to me, and like it's not good that a bunch of people lost their jobs, but when they were doing these cuts, they also did a massive amount of cuts at their corporate office. And supposedly one of them, they had two different marketing departments.
Yeah.
One who like created, you know, advertising and stuff for like everything and like everything but the network, because the network had its own advertising apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So they just like fired a bunch of people, merged those two things, and they were like, cool, now we have one marketing department.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the network people went by the wayside because it was like they were suddenly a redundancy, right?
Exactly.
Because Peacock is running the show.
I think if that's a thing, if like they're not even selling, maybe they're just realizing like, oh man, we are losing all this potential profit on all these things that we don't necessarily need. And maybe they finally got around to like actually looking at the talent of like, okay, we have you and we use you sometimes, but are we really making money off you? Are you a draw?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the point of the like hiring bonanza that they went on 2 years ago was to be like, okay, let's see if we can prevent AEW from actually starting.
Yeah.
And now that they can't, they're like, okay, well then let's trim the roster. Or maybe they really want to be focused into going into like a new generation of people, and it's like they were looking at Braun Strowman as like a sunk cost, and now we're like, I think we've hit our ceiling with him. Who knows?
Yeah. What if? Also, here's my conspiracy theory.
Great. I got another one for you after this.
What if they keep releasing people in the hope they're like, oh well, AEW's gotta sign them, and then before you know it, AEW has signed too many people to massive contracts and the company goes under, a la WCW in 2000.
I mean, maybe they're trying to run it back, but like, I feel like the people that AEW has been most interested in are people who either are at the tail end of their career, so they don't need to sign a giant contract because they're not going to be performing many dates, or they're interested in people who are underutilized, like people who are released early into their WWE tenure, like Andrade, who, like, I'm sure is not the most paid person in AEW, and like probably doesn't even have an AEW contract, is probably going to be like Cody Rhodes was pre-AEW and like, you know, pop up in a bunch of different markets. So yeah, maybe that's what they're doing, but that seems like a rash decision. I just thought of something else that they could be trying to acquire that they are getting rid of some money for.
Should I keep my tinfoil hat on or take it off?
Keep your tinfoil hat on. This is cool. I guess there's like kind of some actual concrete news to support what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. Is that I know that Nick Khan and Triple H have been used and utilized recently in trying to expand WWE into Japan, because they were going to, you know, it's been rumored forever that they're going to do NXT Japan, and then it was like, oh, maybe the Japanese audience will really reject that, because you know, the biggest heel move you can do in Japan wrestling is, you know, be an American coming to take over.
American.
Right. So I know that they've been trying to work with New Japan to see if they could get dates for Daniel Bryan and do talent exchange, or maybe even be the like sole broadcast rights owner for New Japan in America. And now I'm like, why don't they just buy New Japan?
Oh my god.
Because like that wouldn't cost that, probably not $1 billion.
Probably no.
There's, you know, you get an amazing library of content. You get
the talent alone.
Amazing Jesus. Talent that you can do exchanges with that really feel, it would feel so much bigger than like, okay, we're gonna have Matt Riddle go do a match in Evolve this week and then come back. You know, like it is a totally different market that they want to be in.
Yeah.
So
we could have freaking Tanahashi in the Royal Rumble. Like,
yeah, I think that would actually really, you can basically have them continue to run their day-to-day the same themselves, and then just put WWE's production value on top of New Japan.
And then you could do little spots like that, have like Okada come over for a pay-per-view, have, you know,
and
Seth
that,
Rollins go over there or something. Or,
and that would really hurt AEW, I think.
I don't think it would actively hurt AEW.
Yeah.
But it would be definitively like closing the door. On
yeah, literally.
closing the metaphorical door on a bunch of potential for AEW that I think a lot of people are hoping for.
Yeah. Have I talked to you into thinking that this is actually what their plan is? Is it like a 10% chance that this happens, maybe?
There is. See, that's the problem is there is a chance. There's always a chance with that. I saw the report recently where it was talking about WWE and NJPW having some sort of working relationship. So, I mean, that report could be misreporting, and that working relationship is them buying them. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think like we both feel like there's going to be a huge WWE news event that will happen in the summer that's not SummerSlam.
Yeah.
You know, like something is going to happen, and we and it's going to happen. Then we're going to be like, oh, I can't believe we couldn't see that.
Yeah. I mean, but just on the nose, do you think they're selling?
I guess that, like, I guess that's the most likely thing out of everything that we, you know what? I think the most likely thing is that they're just trying to see how much they're worth, and then they're not going to sell.
Trying to get the gauge, maybe.
They might even, like, think that that's what they're doing right now, is getting ready to sell. But I think when, you know, the moment comes for Vince to sign the paper, I don't buy that he will do it. You know, the name on the contract says Khan, but, you know. I don't know. I feel like the rumored buyer has been NBC, right? NBC right. Universal. And I don't trust them to buy.
WWE. I don't see them wanting it. Yeah. Certainly not for that amount of money.
Like, yeah. I could see Disney buying them. But that's maybe. That's the only media I could, because HBO's not going to buy them. I mean, that would be a coup. That would be the that worst thing possible for AEW. If Warner, you know, who else just jumped into bed with Warner last week? Somebody did. I don't know. It's all just going to be, it's going to be the Amazon World Wrestling Entertainment, you know, sooner or later anyway.
That's true.
So we'll see. Okay. I have one more like question I really want to ask in this section. You know, Braun Strowman being released really shocked us. Samoa Joe being released really shocked us. The Iconics being released really shocked. You know, a lot of these releases were shocking. How many people are left on the WWE roster that are truly untouchable, or that, like, if they were released now, you would be truly shocked? I think it's honestly pretty small now.
It's a small list. You can count them on your fingers. Like, it's like right now, people who are truly untouchable that WWE would never fire unless forced to, like, Roman Reigns.
Yeah, Roman Reigns is number one.
Roman is number one. Becky Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, at that point, things start to get a little fishy.
I would say the New Day are actually the next one for me.
New Day, yeah, that's
fair. I guess you could release one of the three of them and still, you know, be like, hey, trot them out. They're the New Day. But, like,
see, that's tough. I was going to say Big E would probably be the one they let go, but I don't see him getting rid of Xavier because he's too valuable to them as a crossover star.
Yeah, yeah.
But New Day, maybe Randy Orton?
No, actually, that's where I start to push back. That is, like, now it would not shock me to see Randy Orton.
It would not,
like,
okay.
If you were, like, if you
them release Randy or Randy leaving? Because those are
release,
two different
because
things.
Because I feel like you would rather release him if he's going to leave so that he has the non-compete
right.
for a certain amount of time. But, like, you mentioned earlier, like, maybe they're just trying to do the same stuff that worked for them against WCW.
Yeah.
And, like, Randy's got to be worth so much money. He strikes me as someone who would not settle to be paid for less than he's worth.
No.
And he's been with the company for such a deceptively long time that he now is 41 and, you know, in the body of, like, a 60-year-old. So you gotta assume that's like, okay, let the people we've done everything we can do with leave.
But so, okay, so we'll scratch Randy.
Yeah. Randy,
John Cena.
Randy's,
but
is John Cena
active
under contract to WWE?
See, that's right the now? Thing. Like, he's not an active wrestler, and I don't know if he's still under contract, but he's one of those guys who I feel like has a lifetime contract. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he's definitely, even if he's not actively signed to a contract, I'm sure he has contracts about merchandising.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But okay. So even though, so, like, let's say John Cena's an iffy, that's, we got 4.5. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I don't
AJ
know.
AJ Styles? Or is that the same thing as Randy Orton?
See, it's the same thing. Like, AJ's older. I don't know how much more value he is to them in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. There's literally no one else.
The Miz?
Like, Oh, no. I at this point in my life, I love The Miz, and I think WWE loves The Miz.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I don't think he's untouchable.
I mean, they've got a lot. I mean, then, like, Miz and Mrs. would have to be canceled, and, like, I'm sure NBC would not be happy about that.
Maybe.
So, I literally have the list of people in front of me, so now I'm trying to find, like, a younger person who is untouchable. But I feel like that would have been Braun Strowman, right? Like,
I got nobody. As long as he stays in NXT, Adam Cole. But
yeah, is Alexa Bliss untouchable?
Maybe she's probably like right under Becky. Yeah,
she's in the Randy AJ where like they really don't want to see them go, but they will if they have to.
She's probably like right under them.
Bobby Lashley.
No, I can
he can go in a heartbeat. Yeah.
Once he's no longer valuable to them, they'll let him go.
Yeah. Like Kevin and Sammy, I could see.
Nah, they'll get rid of Sammy.
Yeah.
I want them to get rid of
Sammy. Seth Rollins?
See, Seth's a maybe. Seth, like
because of Becky?
Well, because of Becky, but he has this, like, he's similar enough to Roman. And how the company views him and treat, like, not like being undefeated like Roman is, but he's someone I think the company sees as we can put the title on him and he can be the guy at any point.
Yeah. He's only 35. He can.
And he's still super young. Yeah. He's got a lot of potential. I think, again, Seth's like in that group as well. It is not a lot. Not a lot of people.
Yeah, we really, like, after those first five, we don't have anyone else that we feel 100% about. Sasha Banks?
Sasha's a maybe.
Bianca now? Maybe Bianca will be the person. Like, maybe a year from now, it will be
maybe,
like,
yeah, she needs a little more time. Yeah. Sasha is definitely more valuable to them than Bayley is, but...
Is she more valuable to them than Alexa Bliss?
See, that's what I would say, yes, but I don't know if WWE feels that way.
Yeah. Man. Well, I guess, like, really, they maybe are at a crossroads where now it's the time to, like, really turn over the roster and find new people. Because, like, AEW certainly has gone younger or is, like, developing their young people.
Their
new
stars, yeah, exactly.
And now, you know, you look at, you know, a roster that WWE... had, like, everyone is like, well, this is the best roster they've ever had, but you have a lot of people who have made names and identities elsewhere. So maybe it's time to shuffle the deck.
It's just they don't have a lot of, like, super young people.
No.
And that's not a problem. And it's not to say, like, their current top stars are old by any means. I mean, Roman and Seth and them, they're in their mid-30s. They still have plenty of time. But again, comparing it to AEW, who has stars in their early 20s, who are already very highly prominent on the card and only have up to go in the next 25 years of their career. So
yeah, we went a little bit over in this, but that's okay. We're going to do one more quick thing in this section. Very, very quick. Like, don't think about it too hard. I'm going to shoot some questions at you, Tyler, about what's more likely with these six people who were released.
Yes.
Tyler, what's more likely? Braun Strowman winning the IWGP heavyweight title in 2022 or Braun Strowman being cast in a Marvel movie next year?
Marvel movie.
What's more likely, Tyler? Aleister Black starting a faction in AEW with Andrade? Or Aleister Black debuting in New Japan Pro Wrestling under the moniker Jay Black, setting up a program against Jay White.
just because you texted me that, and I know you're super proud of that, so I'm going to say showing up in NJPW is Jay Black.
Man, if that happens, I'm going to quit this podcast and, you know, buy a lottery ticket. Like, Tyler, what's more likely? Lana going to AEW and being aligned with Miro, or going to AEW and being aligned against him?
It's more likely to be aligned with him. I would like against him. I think that would be interesting.
Ooh, interesting. What is more likely, Tyler? Ruby Riott, Santana Garrett, and other recent female releases like Chelsea Green and the Iconics all deciding to go to the same company or spreading out over multiple companies?
Definitely spreading out.
you don't think that they all just go to Impact and it's like Impact has the ladies. I don't know that I believe that. I'm just throwing
Impact
that out there.
Impact has the ladies. That would be their catchphrase.
They go back to being called TNA. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very tone deaf.
I think they would go to multiple companies. Just that, yeah. I'm still on the train that the Iconics are going to AEW, but we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah. Tyler, what is more likely? Buddy Murphy having a 5-star match in the next year or Buddy Murphy winning a world title in the next year?
5-star match, definitely.
Where do you think he's going to end up? He's the one who I think is like, I see a lot of doors that can be open for him.
He could be of value to a lot of companies. If he goes to Impact, he's not an immediate top guy, but he's some guy who could be of huge value to your company. Mm-hmm. ROH, again, also be a not immediate top guy, but super value to your company.
Oh, I feel like if you're ROH, you can pitch him on, like, you'll be our world champion in a year.
Maybe. I don't know. Because yeah. Roosh is still their champion, right?
Yeah, but he is, you know, not super happy with them right now. So
I don't know. I was going to say I could see Buddy Murphy doing the New Japan thing. And again, just being like, you know, one of their new hot gaijin in the company and stuff. Mm-hmm. Specifically, if he does end up moving back to Australia, where he is from, it would be just a quick plane flight over. So,
yeah. All right. Well, lots of interesting stuff is going to unfold for those six individuals for the, you know, 30 or so other people who have been released who have yet to land, and for whatever Vince McMahon has cooking in his head.
Oh,
but
it's gonna be bad.
Yeah. But we're gonna jump over to another company right now with our remaining 20 to 30 minutes, and let's just have like a lovely conversation about Double or Nothing. It's in all the right. books. We saw the return of full capacity fans for AEW, and right now we're gonna break down what worked, what didn't, and speculate on where AEW goes from here. So I'm sure, you know, listeners, don't worry. I'm sure there's going to be a fair amount of fantasy booking within here. Yeah. Oh, so Tyler, AEW Double or Nothing is in the books. I'm your boss, your editor. You're a lowly 20s copywriter. And I'm like, Tyler, see, you got to give me the headline. You got to move some papers for me. What do you put as the headline in your article that's the review of Double or Nothing?
Oh, man. So I would preface it by saying, look, boss, I don't know why you keep asking me to do this. I'm not a great writer.
I think I do like doing this a lot on our show because of how much you don't like it. Maybe you should ask me next time and I'll see if I like it.
Well, it's just, so my thought, the headline, coming out of Double or Nothing, and I'm going to have to, what's the opposite of prefacing?
Epiloguing.
I'm going to explain it after.
Yeah.
I would headline this, how about that Jungle Boy, huh? And I'm gonna epilogue this because pay-per-view happened and everything. Jungle Boy had a great showing in the Battle Royal, wins it, he's gonna get a world title shot. Wasn't the main event, like, wasn't even in, I don't even think in the second half of the show.
Yeah, it was in
but
that
it was
big meaty middle.
great moment, he got a great pop. The reason why I'm saying how about that Jungle Boy is because I also recently went back and watched this previous week's AEW Dark and AEW Dark Elevation. They're two YouTube shows.
Mm-hmm.
Those two episodes were filmed that same day of Double or Nothing, just like beforehand. And you can tell because like it's full crowds, but the crowds are still like coming in, like all the seats aren't full and everything. It's like super light out. And so, AEW Dark, main event, Jungle Boy versus someone. Jungle Boy wins. AEW Dark Elevation, main event, Jungle Boy versus somebody. Jungle Boy wins. So,
man, he had a long day.
And I was going to say, breaking the kayfabe of this, that crowd saw Jungle Boy win 3 matches in one night. So, wow. Like... how about that Jungle Boy?
Yeah, I think that is a worthy headline. I think I would say AEW Double or Nothing, Days of Future Past, because I feel like it was really focused on both bringing up new talent now that we're back in front of fans and a few older talents really like earning their he still got it chance.
Yeah.
Like I think like maybe because it was such a consistently good show from beginning to end, the headlines weren't like, oh my god, Sting wrestled without a shirt, you know, but that's really what I thought it was gonna be.
Yeah.
I think that leads
perfectly into the following question, yeah. Andrew. Who surprised you most on this
Sting
card?
Sting surprised
I was gonna
me
say
the
it's
most.
Sting, it's Sting.
Yeah, it's Sting. I think we had heard some, and maybe this is a thing where like the wrestlers put out phony dirt sheet stuff, but like the talk of like, well, Sting's back is destroyed, yeah. And we haven't seen him do any real in ring stuff. He'd been so protected, and like had been wrestling in a shirt, and it's like, oh well, you know, I'm sure you heard this too. It's like, oh, he's wearing the shirt because like they can put padding underneath him,
right,
to protect him, right. So like we both were so cautious about Sting wrestling that I thought it was an amazing bit of storytelling of playing against our expectations by him, you know, very early in the match, taking a bump, taking off his shirt to reveal that there is no padding, and then jumping off the set. And it's like,
taking that suplex on the ramp and no-selling it.
Sorry, that's the first thing. Like that and the no-sell felt like the text in the match was like, Sting is back, right?
Yeah.
And the subtext was like, we were being told that, right? It's like, okay, here's a spot that you don't think is going to happen. And then he's going to take off his shirt, which you don't think is going to happen. And then he's going to jump off the set, which you don't think he can do. Mm-hmm. And it really would. That was such a shocking moment that I don't know if he actually is perfectly healthy or if they were just like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it with fans because it's going to create an outstanding moment.
I mean, see, like he looked great to me.
That match was fantastic, by the way.
That was excellent match, done great. Again, Sting was absolutely the biggest surprise on the card just because we weren't aware of his capabilities. But at this point, like, now I'm confused. Why was Sting's WWE run, why did it end the way it did? Obviously, if, you know, he probably did get injured and was on the shelf recovering for a while.
Yeah.
But he seems completely fine now, so...
I mean, maybe
why
that's another
not
one that like they're paying
him
a lot.
Him back?
Yeah, they're paying him a lot to then not do much. And
I guess,
you know,
so.
I think there's probably just a higher threshold you have to pass physically to be allowed to compete in WWE compared to other places. But I mean,
probably
other,
and they probably have just a lot more like liability things that they don't want to be on the hook for, so you do have to pass more tests.
Yeah, I think that really is the crux of it. And I mean, it's a overused idiom for a reason, but like time heals all wounds, right? I know that it's supposed to mean like emotional wounds, but in this case, like it physical wounds. Like we've seen sports medicine in the last 5 to 6 years has really taken a giant leap forward because so many people who we were told, like, you know, they can't take a bump or they'll die instantly,
right.
are now back in wrestling. So I think the only person left
who's
on the list is Paige. Yeah. So, like, now I won't be shocked if she comes back. I was surprised by Sting because of his age comparatively to all the rest of these people who have come back. But now I guess I'll never be surprised by someone coming back ever again, which is why Hulk Hogan will main event WrestleMania next year. What was like surprise 1A or 1B for you, Tyler?
Surprise 2 is Cody Rhodes winning. That's not how I would have booked that.
Yeah. Did you think that, like, there was no chance that he would win going in on Memorial Day as the American?
It just didn't, like, I should have seen it coming. All the points were there telling me that Cody was going to win. Memorial Day weekend, like, Cody is wrestling as the American Dream, his father's namesake, like, all the reasons were there. But to me, I still can't justify Cody winning that match. Like, it didn't make sense for the story. It immediately buries Agogo. Like, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot about that particular match that didn't make a lot of sense. And maybe we'll get to it in a question a bit further down the line here. But I would be remiss if we didn't, with our limited time, make sure to talk about Stadium Stampede 2.
Yes.
Really quickly. How did it compare to the first match for you?
I think it was fine. it was not as entertaining as the first Stadium Stampede, but I don't think they necessarily wanted it to be. It didn't have the same intention as the first Stadium Stampede, which was a far more comedic and a lot more comedic spots, where this one it had a few, like, sort of haha funny moments, but it was supposed to be a whole different feel to it. I preferred the first one. But also has to do with, like, being the first one. I didn't know what to expect. Everything was just, like, off the wall, like, unexpected and surprising and exciting. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you that, like, maybe the most shocking thing about it was how tonally different it was from the first one. I mean, the first one had so many, like, jokes about being in a football stadium and, like, so mm-hmm. many, like, jokes about the conventions of sports.
Yeah.
And I think you also had a more comedically, comfortable cast in that first one. I mean, you didn't have the Young Bucks or Matt Hardy in this one. And that's three people who thrive on comedy. And it made sense to me later when I found out that Stadium Stampede 2 was heavily influenced by them hiring the fight choreographer for John Wick to come work on this. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, that it seems like it was like a few wrestling agents standing behind him as he's like, and this is what's going to happen. And they're like, well, in wrestling you do it a little differently. And they're like, okay, great. Like, it definitely felt like that was the vibe they were going for. I felt that the most in the Ty not Ty Dillinger in the Sean Spears Sammy Guevara segments, I felt like it really felt plotted like a movie.
That might have been my favorite spot of that match. Yeah. was Sean Spears going full anime villain and, like, waiting in the room of chairs with the chair. Like, that was so great.
I wanted a dance number there with that. But, like, yeah, I felt a lot of John Wick there. I felt it with punching a hole in the wall in the Urban Meyer's office part. Like, it felt weird because, like, the tone was so serious. Like, the stuff that was comedic didn't work for me. Like, all the stuff with MJF and Chris in that office and being like, oh, there's the new coach of the Jaguars and he's gonna curse. Yeah. Like I don't know who that was for at this point. How did you feel about its placement on the card? As being like the big feel good ending of the night.
it makes sense. Just not so much in that you want a feel good ending, but, like, with a match like that, it's hard to not have that be the last one. Maybe they kind of, like, subverted that a little bit because, again, if I'm basing it off just my knowledge of the first one, I'm thinking that it's all going to be a pre-taped video. The fact that they ended the match in the ring helped in that at that point it could have been not the main event, because you're still, like, you know, giving the crowd that live reaction and being able to see it, and then you could follow it up with the main event or whatever. But I'm okay with it. It was a good feel good moment. I liked, honestly, the subtle storytelling of Sammy being the one who lost the first Stadium Stampede, now being the one who captures the win as they've made their face turns. Like, I liked that little bit.
I agree with you there. I also don't know if I buy Inner Circle as faces still yet.
Like, I see. I you can't even call them faces, but they're not necessarily heels.
They're not as heelish as Pinnacle,
right?
At this point, who MJF tried to kill Chris Jericho with a hammer at a certain point. Right. His like jump off the wall in that conference room bit was awesome, I want to say. I guess I'm most excited. Like, I didn't think I would ever want another Stadium Stampede match, but now I like this idea of the next evolution of cinematic matches is bringing in actual Hollywood people to like put their own
choreographers
touches.
And directors.
I want to see like I want to see like empty warehouse match, directed by Quentin Tarantino. Like, I want this to be like a thing that they use as a selling point of like, let's see pro wrestling from someone else's point of view entirely. Yeah.
I want to see what Tony Jaa can do with Tay Conti.
Yeah.
Have her do some crazy kicks and shit.
I want to see an episode of Raw. Actually, no, I want to see an episode of SmackDown that is written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, and it's like a lot of backstage politics and people walking and talking, and like I think it would be
so
great.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see if they work the Stadium Stampede match into the AEW video game somehow. It's their most like AEW specific match so far. So we'll see.
I think because that game, they've already won it to feel more arcadey rather than like a simulation like the WWE 2K games. Like, they gotta have all the silly matches they've created, like the Arcade Anarchy, like maybe even the Mimosa Mayhem match will be in there.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. I want to see all of it in there. Maybe they'll put the exploding barbed wire ring match. Like, that actually would be great in a video game.
Only if it's also a dud in the game.
Were there other matches on the card? Like, what was the best match on the card to you?
Best match was the main. Oh, it's the triple threat.
Yeah, man, I did not expect a whole lot out of this three way match for the AEW World Championship between Omega, Cassidy, and Pac. That went 27 minutes. Maybe I didn't expect anything because I thought the result was a foregone conclusion, but Tyler, why was it the best match of the night?
That was part of my thing. I don't want to say that I didn't expect anything from it. I expected a lot just because it's Kenny Omega, Pac, and Orange Cassidy in a triple threat match for the world title. I expected it to be very good. I did not expect them to genuinely make me think that Kenny was losing that belt, and they had me for a couple moments. I was like, oh my god, it's happening. And that's good wrestling. That's good booking right there. Like, beginning of the match, most of the entire match, at no point I was like, Kenny's not losing this belt, it's just a matter of how does he keep it. But there were some amazing sequences they would do. One of my favorite, the one that stands out immediately, is Pac hits his top rope Falcon Arrow on Omega, and the second they hit the mat, Orange Cassidy runs in, grabs Pac, throws him out, and then goes for the cover to get the steal win. That was one of the closest two counts I've ever seen in my life. I genuinely screamed over here watching. I was like, ah! Like,
yeah,
it was
did
amazing.
The same. I really bought it at that moment. And I think Pac had another moment like that where Cassidy hit
the submission locked in on Cassidy, and Kenny was trying to get him to break it and he wouldn't break it.
Oh, I loved that as like a moment too.
And
like,
then Kenny hit the ref.
Yeah. I thought that was like, that was a perfectly executed WWE match. Right? Like, all three of these people are people who, gimmicks aside, I think you think of as like really technical wrestlers. And I think we've seen that from Pac versus Kenny already in AEW. Mm-hmm. And so that's like, I guess like I was like concerned about the styles clash of the three people together, because Orange Cassidy works with anybody one-on-one, but with three people, I feel like there could be bad juxtaposition.
Right.
But I was so wrong. I was so thoroughly sports entertained in this match. And it's like, oh, you know, I think maybe we both assumed going into AEW's creation based on their roster and where they had come from, that it was going to be a more grounded, realistic, strong style,
a New Japan type company
in general. And I think that, like, I've been most surprised, you know, 2 years in now to be like, oh, AEW actually excels maybe best as a like sports entertainee, like big showmanship, like kind of promotion. And that's been really, really shocking to me. I have to mention how great the opening match was.
Opening was Hangman and Cage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had never been that into Cage, and I got it in this match. I thought this was 12 minutes, and I thought it was like a perfect 12-minute match.
I thought it was a great little match. Again, good, fun, exciting match to start the show. I really appreciate the storytelling we're getting from Cage and Team Taz right now.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Brian Cage is finally getting utilized in a way that matters.
Yes. Yes, I couldn't agree more, Tyler, because like he is someone who can just like float in the he feels like a main eventer, and it's hard to keep him in the mid card. I guess that's both of these people in this match, but this felt like an important match for the future of the company, right?
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. Also, just defend the freaking belt, honestly. Like,
yeah.
I don't understand the FTW championship.
At first
I thought it was just like a prop to make Cage feel bigger, and like at this point I'm convinced that's what it is, because he's only actually defended it like once or twice maybe.
Yeah.
And at this point I'm just like, am I supposed to care about this belt? Like when AEW makes their video game, and like in wrestling video games, they have the belts that are going to be there. Is the FTW championship going to be in the game?
Maybe it's like an unlockable.
Because like it doesn't seem like it matters right now.
Well, maybe that will be the, you know, the symbol that Team Taz will fight itself for now. Maybe Ricky will be like, I should be the leader of this faction.
Oh, and see, like, I like that. There
and
you
like
go.
They fight for that. And
perfect
maybe Taz
device.
Is the ref for it.
Perfect
maybe,
story
maybe
device.
Hook is.
The hierarchy of Team Taz is determined by the FTW championship.
I like that a lot. It's kind of like the fighting over the waterfalls in Black Panther kind of thing.
There you go.
Yeah.
What was your favorite match? Was it the triple threat?
Yeah, it may be the triple threat. Mm. I really liked the tag match too. Like,
oh, yes.
Like, I don't know if there were a lot of matches in this card that, like, we're going to be putting at the top of our list for next year's best of the year list. But, like, everything was solid on this match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Triple threat might be in
it might be in yours, yeah.
In the conversation. We'll see how the rest of the year goes.
I really think that the Young Bucks as heels are working for me now.
Love it.
With their crazy attires being like at the forefront of their character. I really, really like watching Moxley and Kingston come out to Wild Thing, and I think that like the licensing of music is really like really paid off in this pay-per-view for having fans there to do it. I really liked, okay, here's another thing that really like exceeded expectations for me, the crowning of Dr. Britt Baker, which we knew was going to happen, right? I loved how aggressive that match was without having weapons, really. We had talked earlier at WrestleMania about how Asuka versus Rhea Ripley really felt stunted because of like wardrobe troubles. And I felt like this was the exact opposite, where like Sheeta's outfit gets destroyed, and then it like changes the way that she aggressively, like it makes it seem like it was not a thing a performer saw happening, but rather like I am fighting so hard to keep this championship, right? How do you feel with Britt as champion now, and how that match went?
I love Britt as champ. She needed that belt. It was time. Honestly, unfortunately, this match was a little bit of a dud for me.
Interesting.
I thought it was fine. Like in the moment, I was excited like for certain things. Like I really appreciated the entrances. I appreciated you could see Sheeta getting a little emotional on the ramp when she got to come out with all of the crowd there. Loved Sheeta's white gear. Like that popped us here. Me and Sarah loved that.
Yeah.
But so, like the actual match itself, I don't know why. It just, maybe it was an awkward place on the card. It felt like the audience, the live audience, was just a little quiet, more like than I wanted them to be. I just, I don't know. It was a perfectly fine match, and all going up to the ending of like Britt getting the belt, like it had to happen. I even enjoyed Britt and Tony Schiavone getting the hug on the ramp. Yeah. I thought that was a great moment. So
I think you're right about the position on the card was tough for it, because after the hot start to the show with also, you know, Serena Deeb and Riho on the pre-show, like really doing well, and then Paige versus Cage and the tag match are all so good and the crowd is so hot, that I think that Britt and Sheeta having to follow the Casino Battle Royal, which really felt long until the really good ending, like it felt long. I feel like it was a bad omen when the first suit went up there and it was a club and it definitely looked like a spade, and Tony had to be like, it's the club, trust me, like, like that's not a spade, it's a club. Like the Casino Battle Royal felt like it really dropped the audience except for the ending. And then Cody versus Anthony Ogogo was the worst part of the pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
And then like Miro versus Archer was fine, but I think the biggest pop in that is probably them throwing the bag of a snake.
Throwing the snake back.
That was wonderful. But like, yeah, I think Britt and Sheeta had to were given the tall task to try to bring people's energy back up after Cody and Anthony Ogogo lost it. You know? That match sucked. really harsh on it.
That's fair. I don't understand why that match went the way it did. I also don't understand why Cody won with a vertebraker. That's not his finisher.
I think he won it because of the, like, I'm about to make it sound like I don't know how the human body works, but like because of Anthony Ogogo's broken rib, you know, kayfabed or otherwise, going into this, that like a vertebraker would be particularly bad on your midsection.
That match just kind of sucked. I don't understand.
But did it suck because people were not into the story the whole time, like in the build, or like
I think maybe they just didn't
look like they had chemistry to me.
I think people were into it, the story at least. It's tough with the whole Nightmare Family versus the Factory thing of like, I like QT Marshall. And I am happy for him that he is getting to do this heel run and be like a prominent featured character on Dynamite. But I kind of think Cody deserves better, but you should be doing more with Cody. If Cody Rhodes is like, for all intents and purposes, AEW's John Cena, like he is the face of your company in the more expansive, like stepping out into the entertainment world of hosting other television shows and having reality shows and doing guest spots on things, he is going to be your John Cena.
He's certainly John Cena in terms of promotion, like you said.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Then he needs to be in a more high profile feud than with QT Marshall, who before AEW existed, I had no idea who that is. Like, I'm trying not to knock QT Marshall. I like QT Marshall. I think he's doing perfectly. He's entertaining in his current role, but it's just like, come on, like do some more with Cody.
Yeah. Maybe this would have been a better time to have the match against Shaq rather than Anthony Ogogo.
Yeah.
Who, like, again, like, brings in another audience, but, like, I don't think that, that people who are familiar with him were there at Daly's place for this match. I'm going to throw a question out there for you.
Hit me.
Is it a fair criticism to say that Cody Rhodes' storylines and the storylines with the Nightmare family feel like they exist in a separate universe than the rest of the storylines of AEW Dynamite?
Literally, I've heard this said so many times, and I am inclined to agree. It doesn't feel like it feels separate from AEW, exactly.
Why is that, though? Like, that's the thing.
I can't explain why. It's not like the action in the ring, bell to bell, like that. That's not necessarily that different than other things, but like something about it, like I can't explain it. It's just different.
It feels like every other faction, because there are so many, kind of like blend into each other in a way that like they everyone else interacts with everyone else. But maybe it's just because there is a very like, you know, like Nightmare Family and Nightmare Family Wolfpack like feeling to it, that because they're infighting, it seems that that there's no one else that they even pay attention to. And it's, yeah, it feels like they have their own roster.
My other thing, I think what I'm realizing is Cody is too isolated.
Yeah.
When was the last time we saw Cody interact with someone he's not in an immediate storyline with? Like, yeah. When's the last time we saw Cody interact with MJF in any way? They had a massive storyline together. And if you haven't watched Dynamite before like 10 months ago, you would have no idea they even knew each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe like taking him away from the Elite actually has hurt Cody as a on-screen character. And I think, you know, like Kenny and the Young Bucks still are together on screen a lot. Yeah. And I guess this is like probably why that report came out about like, oh, well, maybe the four of them aren't talking to each other anymore. Like, I don't buy that for a second.
I don't buy that. I think that's just dirt sheets.
Yeah. But I think the way that TV is presented is what caused someone to report that. Right.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, I don't know what. Maybe
I just he feels like, to an outside viewer, his stuff feels different because he individually feels separate from everyone else. Again, he's the only one who gets that weird unique entrance from the middle thing.
Yeah,
like he doesn't interact with anyone else outside of his storylines, really. Like, I don't know.
Maybe he needs to feud. I'm going to give you two people that maybe he should feud with next. Then maybe he should feud with Adam Page or with Jon Moxley.
Oh, those are perfect. Those two are literally perfect, actually.
And it's a fight to see who's you know, about to be expected baby will be the best wrestler 20 years from now. Which, again, congratulations to Hangman Adam Page.
I was going to bring it up at the end.
Sorry. I stole your
thunder. No, perfect. Congratulations to friend of the podcast, Hangman Adam Page. He's going to be a daddy.
Yeah. So that's going to be amazing. It might also like put a hitch into his eventual crowning of... I'm kidding, though. He'll be fine.
I was going to say, he's got time.
Yeah, he'll be 100% fine.
Yeah. But damn it, that when you bring it up, I would love to see Cody versus Hangman or Cody versus Mox.
I think it makes sense. I think also like Cody, you know, to his credit, has really been trying to, I think, create new stars, right? Mm-hmm. And AEW as a whole has created new stars, but I don't know. Well, I guess like Cody feuding with Darby Allin really did raise Darby's profile.
Yeah.
But now you got to see Cody be built back up or like work with someone else who's main event, you know,
yeah,
in like in a general market kind of way. I think the time is now. Maybe he should fight Jericho. Like, we haven't seen that in AEW either, really, have we?
I don't
think so. Because Cody's
we
like
saw
storyline
once. We saw it once.
Yeah.
Because it was wasn't it Cody versus Jericho that if
that
he
led
lost,
to MJF
and MJF threw in the towel for him.
Yeah, good point. So we have seen it, but like it, like that storyline contrived.
That just feels so long ago.
Yeah, of like Cody's not allowed to fight for the heavyweight title.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't mean he's not allowed to fight other people in the title picture. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe I'm just a little bored already with the Nightmare Family versus the Factory thing, like. Because we've already seen Cody versus QT one-on-one and Cody won. So, like, just move on. Do something else.
I agree. Well, speaking of moving on, Kenny versus Jungle Boy is booked for this Friday, correct? Or next Friday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Andrade premiered, was introduced by Vicky Guerrero on Dynamite last week. So how do we feel about the direction of the characters and storylines going into the summer? Like, what is going to be the big summer feud in AEW?
I don't know what the big feud is. On, like, as a general statement on it, I think AEW is doing just fine. They remind me every week why I love watching wrestling.
I'll throw something your way. We know that Kenny is going to fight Andrade at Triple Mania in August 14th. So maybe it's time for Kenny to lose a title belt, the AEW title belt, before then.
Ooh.
And maybe Andrade is going to cost him it. But
Andrade...
But like,
costs him the AEW world title?
Yeah. I'm not saying that Andrade wins it, but I think that, like, we know that that match is going to happen, and we know that Kenny can't hold all these belts for all these other promotions forever. I feel like it makes the most sense for him to start by losing the AEW title so that he can kind of go on a tour elsewhere and start dropping stuff.
I would argue, I think it's the complete reverse. I think Kenny needs to lose every belt but the AEW title.
Yeah.
And then when that's the only thing he has left, Hangman takes it from him.
Interesting. It's a really hard thing to book.
I just feel like storytelling wise, like that, it just makes the most sense to me. Like, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a writer, Andrew.
I'm trying to think that, like, the only negative to what you just pitched is that it can weaken Hangman knocking off Kenny Omega if Kenny has already lost a bunch before that.
That's true. He's not at his strongest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then it would be like, okay, does he just like vacate the other titles? But then that makes the other companies look terrible.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't get it.
That's a good point, I guess. The way you're saying it, it does make it seem like Hangman's not defeating Prime Kenny Omega because he has lost all of his belts and stuff. But
maybe it's the opposite of what I just said. Maybe it's Kenny goes to Triple Mania and Hangman shows up at Triple Mania and costs Kenny the Triple A title.
I was gonna say, I'm not sure how, in terms of like if he loses other belts first. I think Andrade is getting that belt.
Yeah.
Kenny's been the Triple A champion for like over 2 years now. Like, I think Andrade is getting that belt.
Yeah. And I could see a world where, like, you know, part of the agreements the AEW had with other promotions are going to start showing up. And if one of them is like, okay, we're going to have some other talents show up in the main event and it be newsworthy, then like, okay, that seems like, you know, the start of it. Mm-hmm. And maybe Hangman just starts showing up in every other promotion, costing Kenny titles.
Costing Kenny,
like,
all of his belts.
Yeah. And it's like a six shooter type thing. And he's like, I'm going to take him out one bullet at a time, you know?
I don't hate that. Kenny needs to get, I guess, two more belts.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be weird to...
If he defends the Impact World title and the TNA World Heavyweight Championship separately,
yeah, it'd be strange. I feel like he would be really expecting Hangman that second time.
right.
Yeah, but I feel
by,
like...
by the fifth title, he's like got to be like barring him from the building. I want a cage match. Like.
Yeah, but I think maybe that is the way... that's the way you have him drop everything else first without it seeming like he is less. But then also, maybe that also doesn't maybe that's still the same thing, that it doesn't make the other companies look great if if their people are not winning clean against Kenny. I don't know. It's an unsolvable problem that's going to have to get solved sooner or later somehow.
Yeah. And again, the biggest issue is that I love Kenny Omega, but I agree that, like we were saying with the triple threat match, Kenny having the belt and doing this sort of pseudo belt collector thing, like, it's definitely like clogging up storylines potential of like, we're pretty sure like Kenny's not losing that belt anytime soon. So any title matches between now and whenever we decide it's time, like, you can forego the ending. Like, I mean, we know, I know Jungle Boy's not winning on Friday, but like, I'm super excited to see that match. Yeah. I knew Kenny wasn't going to lose that belt in the triple threat match, but they had points of tricking me. So,
I'm trying to, in my head, talk myself into a world where Jungle Boy wins, but I don't think that there's not one that exists.
I would mark out so hard. Yeah. That'd be incredible.
All right. Well, I think we've about covered it. We've hit that time limit. So I'm going to remind you all that if you want us to answer questions in the Kayfabe 520, submit them to us on our website, muchadowrestling.com, or on Twitter at @adowrestling, or you can email them to us directly at muchadowrestling@gmail.com. Tyler, do you got anything you want to say?
Not really. Keep watching wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay cool.
Stay cool out there.
As always, we're going to leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
D-M-D.
Oh, I do need to go to the dentist. Thank you for reminding me of that.